This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
Thanks for joining us once again here on the eHealth Radio Network. This is your host, Eric Michaels. Today we're speaking with Mr. Richard Vague, who serves as Pennsylvania Secretary of Banking and Securities. Prior to his 2020 appointment, he was managing partner of a venture capital company, co-founder, chairman, and CEO of an electricity and natural gas company, and co-founder and CEO of two national consumer banks. His new book is The Case for a Debt Jubilee. And Mr. Vague, thanks for joining us here today on eHealth Radio.
It's a real privilege to be here. Thank you.
Well, certainly an honor to have you with us here today on eHealth Radio. And speaking of your book, by the way, The Case for a Debt Jubilee, and looking at health and households, why are households now so deeply in debt? Let's start there.
Well, it is a long-term trend. Right after World War II, private sector debt, which is consumer and business debt, was at 50% of GDP. Today, it's at 160% of GDP. It has more than tripled in relationship to our income in just that span. And it's all across the board. It's mortgage debt, healthcare debt, automobile lending, certainly student lending. All these areas are burdening families across the country.
Now, another question for you. Your book is titled The Case for a Debt Jubilee. What is a debt jubilee?
Well, the term comes from ancient civilizations, which included Egypt, Babylon, Israel is where the specific term comes from, where, contrary to our belief that these were barter economies, these were sophisticated debt-oriented economies. And individuals over time, households, primarily agriculture, would pile up debt over years. And so from time to time, kings would see that the economy was overburdened with household debt and declare a debt amnesty. In other words, everybody who had accumulated these debts, debt to buy seed, debt to buy food, and the like, would have those debts forgiven. And when that happened, there was an economic renewal. People were free to start over, spend in a way that they had not been for years. And it was a great celebration and a great occasion. Well, that accumulation of debt has never changed, and people are starting to look around and see how much our economy is burdened, how much our growth has slowed because of the accumulation of debt, and said we need to come up with modern day ways to give consumers, households, relief from debt.
Certainly sounds like a tremendous and a helpful resource to have access to the book, The Case for a Debt Jubilee. Now, you propose programs for reducing levels of student debt, healthcare debt, and the debt of mortgages in arrears. Won't strong growth in the economy take care of those household debt issues without special programs? What's your thought on that?
Well, that's a popular idea that, you know, there's certain ways to decrease our debt burden. And we see politicians regularly saying, we just need to grow. We'll just grow our way out of this debt burden. So we took data from the 50 largest countries in the world, which constitute 91% of global GDP. So it's really, you know, a pretty exhaustive exercise, and tried to find examples where economies had outgrown their debt problem. And the truth is, it almost never happens. And the reason it almost never happens is growth is dependent on debt. Debt is what brings economic growth. So you can't outgrow debt because it takes debt to grow. Automobile companies grow their revenues when consumers borrow to buy cars. Real estate companies grow when consumers borrow to buy houses. Manufacturing growth occurs when manufacturers borrow to build new factories. So as nice as it sounds, if you do an exhaustive amount of research like we have, what you see is, best case, debt grows only as fast as GDP, but normally debt grows faster than GDP. Now, there is an exception to that. There are periods where debt declines. But guess what? That brings calamity. It was a contraction in debt in 2008 that brought the Great Recession. It was a massive contraction in debt that came with the Great Depression in the 1930s. So unassisted, unaided, debt doesn't, you know, debt ratios don't get better.
Certainly appreciate the information and insight shared so far. Really appreciate that. Today we're speaking with Richard Vague, who serves as Pennsylvania Secretary of Banking and Securities. His new book is The Case for a Debt Jubilee, and he's joined us here today on eHealth Radio's Health News Channel, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. Now, Mr. Vague, some have resisted the idea of forgiving student debt because it is unfair to those who've paid their student loans and those who never went to college. Is there a fair way to give relief to those struggling with student loans today?
Well, you are absolutely right. If we went out today and just forgave everybody's student debt, there would be a large measure of unfairness in that for exactly the reasons you described. You know, here's family number one who's scrimp and save, and the kid gets a part-time job while at school, and they manage to prepay and then pay off the loan they had to get to supplement what they had saved to get that college debt paid. Here's family number two, you know, that never, you know, reduce their spending, never try to save, get a student loan. It has to be a large loan because they have no savings. You know, don't sacrifice. And, you know, if we forgave student debt, all the hard work family number one did is all for naught compared to family number two. So anytime programs like this are discussed, the element of fairness becomes a huge issue very, very quickly. You may remember there was some mortgage forbearance proposed by Obama during his administration pursuant to the crisis. And the objections were so strong that the Tea Party formed just based on the proposed program by Obama. So in my book, you know, kind of the first half of the book is kind of the intellectual case for the need for debt jubilee. But then when we actually get into programs, we try to come up with something that's fair, or at least perceived by enough people as fair so that it's legislatively possible. In the case of student debt, what we propose is we take the example of, you know, assistance provided by Army Service, where there's a program right now that if you work for the government and you pay your student loan for 10 years, the remaining balance is forgiven. So there's small precedents here and there, and we just try to take that precedent and say, if an individual has a student loan and makes payments for 8 years or so and works, let's call it 800 hours of legitimate, helpful community service, then their debt would be forgiven. So it is really asking something of the borrower without just blanket forgiveness. And as we've trotted this around the country and talked to folks about it, there's a whole lot of folks that are excited about that. They think there's an element of fairness to it. There's a whole lot of nonprofit organizations that are very excited about it. As you know, they are all doing invaluable work on a shoestring budget, and having some additional community service help is something they look at with great favor. So that or something in that direction we think could be very, very helpful.
Most certainly, and this information is quite interesting, and really do appreciate the focus here today. Now, lastly, some less fortunate folks have gotten far behind on their mortgage payments, and some lenders are just tacking on the missed payments, effectively making their mortgage balances larger. Is there a better way to help those struggling with their mortgage, especially after this pandemic?
Well, thank you for asking. You know, we were faced with a similar problem in the Great Recession, where we had millions upon millions of homes that were underwater. So you had folks that had a house worth $300,000 when they bought it, and the value because of the Great Recession had fallen to, let's say, $250,000. So they were potentially $50,000 underwater. Same thing here. You know, they had been given forbearance, so they haven't had to make payments for months and months and months. And yet, by tacking on the payments to the end of the mortgage, you're in effect increasing the balance of the mortgage. Well, we would propose a program that would be voluntary. This would be at the borrower's option only. They could go to their lender and negotiate a reduction in principal. You know, and that could be 10% of their principal. It could be 50% of their principal. And ask the borrower to reduce their mortgage by that amount in exchange for, in the future, when they sell the house, the lender gets 25% of the gain, let's call it. And that would be a negotiated item. But banks wouldn't want to do that. The program doesn't work as the structure is today because banks would have to take that as a loss in their current quarterly earnings report. They would have to face that loss today. So what we've proposed, and this is based on things that have been done occasionally in the past, is say to the bank, if you do this for one of your borrowers, we'll let you take that loss over 30 years. Instead of 1 year, and we will let you nevertheless have the first year tax benefit as if you had forgiven the entire amount in that first year. That makes it feasible for the bank. So this is a win-win. If you want your principal and payment reduced today and are willing to give up a little upside in the future, you're going to be happy. The bank's going to be happy because they've improved the financial health of one of their customers, improve the likelihood that mortgage gets paid, and have a gain in the future, and have 30 years to take the loss. So something like that, I think, could be enormously beneficial in those situations.
Mr. Vague, we certainly appreciate what you do and for joining us here today. And of course, if your finances are healthy, your stress level will be down, and that would certainly affect you in a positive way in your regards to health. So certainly to appreciate all the details and information shared here today. I'm sure listeners want to know how they can get more information on you. I understand you have a website, as well as pick up the book, The Case for a Debt Jubilee, a fantastic resource.
Well, thank you. The book's available on Amazon, and it's published by Polity Press. And you can learn more about this book and other books that I've had the good fortune to write at my website, which is richardvague.com. That's Richard Vague, V as in Victor, A-G-U-E.com, richardvague.com.
And of course, we'll leave that link within the show notes of this broadcast to further aid the audience as always. Mr. Vague, all the best. Thanks for joining us here today on eHealth Radio.
You're so kind to have me.
And of course, you're welcome anytime. We've been speaking with Mr. Richard Vague, who serves as Pennsylvania Secretary of Banking and Securities. Here's a new book, Is the Case for a Debt Jubilee? And for further details, visit richardvague.com. And again, this has been your host, Eric Michaels, and we do thank you for your continued support of the eHealth Radio Network. Join us again soon for another episode that will help further expand your knowledge on those things that are important to your health and wellness. For more eHealth Radio reports, we invite you to visit our main radio channel site at eHealthRadioNetwork.com. And as always, we do thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for tuning in to the eHealth Radio Network. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit eHealthRadioNetwork.com.